Those of you who say, each has had experience with complete forgiveness of others by the self. Each has achieved forgiveness with regard to others who have seemingly. 231, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation caused catalyst to occur for the self which was painful. With the passage of time the words, I forgive you, become entirely and wholly true. The memory remains but it has been healed. Therefore, we ask that those with unhealed memories see this as an order of business to be addressed. The self must in some way open the heart to the self's need and ask with no reservation for forgiveness, and more than that, be prepared to accept that forgiveness and to drop that program and allow its spiritual energy to dissipate, allow the past to become the past. We recommend that this kind of work be done promptly and persistently and be given priority, for sorrows and hard-heartedness make a poor combination of guests, and though they speak much they do not make good company. The time, which is precious in each incarnation, need not be spent with such guests if the work be done. 2. One key to this particular strain of indigo ray work is the identification of our particular incarnational lesson or lessons. Here, those of you who use me as an example of how an incarnational plan is put together, let us look at this particular instrument's situation, working toward generalization while doing so. It is commonplace among those who have chosen the manner of their incarnations that there should be more than one stopping place, shall we say call it, within the incarnation. The balance of wisdom and compassion in the mind of the entity before incarnation is automatic. It is a portion of the personality. The wanderer is likely to be wise enough in a balanced manner to offer to the incarnated manifestation of self before birth one central lesson on the personal level, and a series of attainable goals within the impersonal life in service. It is grasped by the individual before the incarnation that during the forgetting process the cold, clear logic of all the goals to be met will be greatly muddled if not obliterated from any conscious knowledge. Therefore, there are the stopping places, for it is not known before it is experienced how much of the lessons learning the spirit self may tolerate without needing healing beyond that which can be offered within incarnation. 3. If the repetition of lessons wearies the spirit overmuch, a seeker's higher self may wally choose to allow the incarnation to come to an end, so that the incarnational healing that is too much to sustain within incarnation might be undertaken. When an entity approaches the end of an incarnational lesson, if that entity has been exhausted by this learning, it will be given the opportunity either to embrace life with all of its confusions and distresses or to. 232, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation embrace the dropping of the physical body and the movement into whatever healing modes the learned lesson has created the need for. When this moment occurs, the choice is freely offered in silence, and the love of life of the entity, or the disdain of life, create the potential for greater health within incarnation and a new lesson to be learned, or the gentle or rough path to the passage into larger life. 4. For the most part, however, the self within incarnation can embrace enough of the experiences of learning that the incarnational lesson, even if missed completely in one opportunity, has the chance to come around again. For we have planned many contingencies. It is the case with most entities entering your illusion that parallel, if we may call them, programs of incarnation are seen as possibilities. If one choice is not taken, then another presents itself so that those lessons to be learned are available. It is quite difficult to describe to entities within your illusion the freedom and fluidity with which these choices are made and pursued. Within your illusion it is generally the case that a plan is made and undertaken and then, if an alteration is made, the changes in the outcome are easily attributable. However, before the incarnation, the range and freedom of choice is such that level upon level of agreement is made, therefore allowing for changes to occur. For though there is the ability to see into what is called your future, this ability also sees that nothing can be known for sure, that there shall be changes, that therefore, there need to be plans for the changes. If one event occurs, then this allows another, but may disallow yet another, and so forth in an endless progression of cause and if. Therefore, there cannot truly be said to be mistakes within any incarnation. 5. I find the thought that there are no mistakes very encouraging. It is so easy to think of lost opportunities. but we always have another chance to express our awareness of the truth. We may not have the privilege of expressing it to just the entity we had hoped to, but if all are seen as the Creator, we can express that truth to a new person with fond regards to those we have been unable to express that truth to in our past. Our incarnational lessons will vary, depending on the person's pre-incarnative view of his need to learn, but we are all the same, those who feel that they have the experience of the presence of the One Creator, and those who have the experience of lack of perceptible union with the Infinite One, appear to be in different situations as regards the choosing of how to manifest the love and the light of the Creator. However, the openness of both kinds of entities to being of service are 233, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation Identical. Some have the experience of aloneness, of loving the Creator but feeling isolated. Others feel the consolation of the Spirit always. These apparent differences are an artful of the incarnational lessons to be learned. There is no true distinction between those who love the Creator. As the strength of faith and will is, so is the entity's true association with that great self of which any atom of consciousness is a part. Each of you is the same, though your experiences vary. The dedication which is not apparent moves as the true measure of service. 6. So whether we are happy or discontented today, the lessons and the healing of the incarnation are concerns we are equally qualified to address. The primary concern here is to discern the pattern of our own incarnations. Each entity has, before the incarnation, chosen this pattern in order that it might balance and intensify and refine those qualities gathered before this illusion that are felt to be primary. There is a great plan within each entity's life which is the pattern, the dance, within the illusion. It is important in learning the mystery of creation, and the honor of serving, that each entity trust the destiny that has been chosen and fuel that trust with the will to persevere, knowing that even if confusion and sorrow and suffering have their day, there is the resolution at some point within the illusion so that each seeker will find the indication that it is truly upon the right path. 7. The incarnational lesson is most often about the giving and receiving of love, in one form or another. Sometimes we find ourselves placed by our higher selves in conditions of limitation, whether from a chronic health concern, a situation with another person or a trauma we have serious trouble healing, and find our life changed, not for the better. At least apparently. We might well bemoan this pre-incarnative tendency to impose limitations, illness, difficulty and challenge on our life experiences, since we cause ourselves woe thereby, but we also, hopefully, are putting ourselves direly in the refining fire we had hoped to achieve. As is so often the case, meditation is recommended in working with this price. The door to the deep self is fairly carefully closed when a spirit enters into manifested, third density incarnation. Vision fails, awareness recedes, finely tuned senses within are muffled with flesh, and the incarnation grows darker as the child grows to be the adult. Yet, the small being survives in the growing complexity of the personal universal awareness that is the self's awareness of a survive universe. In that first look at one's universe, the outcome is dim. Things look dark, difficult and dreary. There is work in all Dhyarayans to support there. 234, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation Physical Self, to corral the emotions, to find the truest heart of self amidst all the vicissitudes of change. Yet, there is within a universe of suns, shall we say, energies that represent, and in a holographic sense are, the vibrations of wisdoms represented by the outward sun and stars. This door to the deep mind where this universe revolves and can gradually be seen is opened by the self and the self only. That is, it cannot be opened by another person in incarnation. Yet, in the inner room of meditation, when silence is truly reigning and the spirit somewhat freed, the desire to find inspiration taken into silent meditation yields an inner guidance. Inner resources come into more and more developed usefulness. 8. The basis for this work is the assumption, which I believe to be literally true, that as we think, so we are. All that you experience within your incarnational pattern is a produce of your own thinking, whether that thinking be conscious or unconscious, whether that thinking be done during the incarnation or previous to the incarnation, for it is the power of the mind to generate thoughts that, when focused upon for a long enough period of what you call time or experience, then become manifest within your life pattern to provide glorious opportunities for learning or for serving. Thus, all you experience is a produce of thought. 9. Working with desires. The mind is a powerful thing, speaking not simply of the brain but of consciousness. But if our thinking directs our experience, how do we get into the process of thinking to work with it? One great key is desire. Most of our thinking is geared to what we desire and how to pursue that which we desire. Those of you who say, gazing at the nature of your density, we may safely remark that desire is the fuel that runs the engine of your illusion, both the portion which is shadow and that portion which is form. That is to say that desire is intrinsic to the awareness of being individuated. Desire is inherent in a consciousness of the self and the not-self. Whether it be wise or foolish, profitable or unfortunate to desire, those enjoying incarnation within your density will experience the proceeding and issuing forth of desires. 10. 235. Chapter 8. The healing of the incarnation are instinct and desire for spiritual evolution is as inevitable a force as our instinct for self-preservation and evolution as a physical being. When we focus on our thoughts, we can easily find desire in them. They range from the ephemeral desires of the moment to the most deeply felt hungers of our souls. I just returned home from a Holy Week service, and my trip held several times of desire for some slow top on the expressway to move over so I could get to church or back home. At the same time, what drove me out into the traffic was the hunger and thirst for worship. As a guest at our meditation said last Sunday, Jesus went through this just once, but Christians go through the steps to the cross every year. To me, the path is one steeped in devotion, as I spend time with this beautiful soul who wished only to do his Father's will. I gladly take the time away from all else to capture these bittersweet moments of my own truth. Am I the person with the lead foot on the expressway, or a seeker after the divine? Both of those and a good deal more besides. And so are we all. One way to see into the working of desire is to ask oneself, is this a preference or an adhesion? This is a concept offered by Ken Keyes in his handbook to higher consciousness. 11. Those of you who talk about this, desires in and of themselves are neither bad nor good, they simply are things which create a bias. If one moves too far along that route of desire, the bias becomes an adhesion. So in many ways the two rambunious desires of the somewhat less evolved person may be seen to be of an adhesive quality. The feeling is, if I have this, I will be all right, if I do not have this I shall not be all right. This author, Keyes, encourages the adhesive to downgrade that adhesive to preference. One can say, I prefer that this thing happen in this way, but I am not adhesive to it. It is not necessary. This too, in its own way, is a key, for when you look at desire with the conscious mind it is difficult to see what that energy is. But you will find that there are adhesions in the personality just as there are in eating foodstuffs, and certainly life becomes a more, shall we say, comfortable illusion when one is able to see clearly one's preferences. 12. This helped me recently when I discovered I was starting to add pounds, again, and without eating an iota more than I ever had. Change of life, in my case, was also a series of changes in the way my body treats food. I let this weight gain go on for the last 6 years, feeling that the weight gave me sturdiness. I felt stronger and more vibrant. My husband continued to like my looks. I was a happy, big woman, and increasing slowly but surely. But as my weight spiraled beyond plumpness, it began to bring with it a mounting list of serious troubles. High blood pressure, high cholesterol. 236. Chapter 8. The healing of the incarnation. Complaining spine, hips, knees and feet. I decided to lose weight. My doer had spelled it out for me, no matter how little I was eating, that amount was now too much. He was, in far, of the general opinion that older women don't need food at all, as long as they take their vitamins and drink fruit juices. He ran down the simple path that the only way we gain weight is if we are taking in more calories than we are using. So I worked with my concept of nutrition a lot, downgrading quantity, removing some food groups from my diet almost completely, upgrading the taste of things, really tasting and appreciating each bite. At this point, I believe I can honestly say that my desire to see myself in a healthier and lighter body mode outweighs my desire to eat. I have cut my portions to about half what they were. I still love to eat, and relish each savory taste and texture. But I have managed to detach myself from old habits that were not working, and form new ones. Over the course of writing this handbook, I have gone back to the weight I carried for my first 30 years of adulthood. If no one but my doer ever notices this, I will be perfectly satisfied. I am doing it for myself, so I may stay in this shadow world that is so dear to me a little longer, and enjoy the party. All this is by way of saying that we can work with our desires, not by extirpating them or eschewing what we love completely, but by reworking our ways so that we and they are more skillful. Square off with one fa, we will get what we desire. This density is construed so that the soul is not finished with it until she has experienced all things she wishes to experience. Consequently, be very careful what we desire. Be cautious and careful in your wishes, your hopes and your desires, for you do inevitably set in motion those things which will occur in order that your hopes may be fulfilled. You shall not hope in vain, but if you hope without depth, without heart, then what you receive shall be shallow and unsatisfying. 13. One goal in this way of working is to begin to see into uplifting or tuning our desires. Don is asking about the price of the initiate spending time down in the resonating chamber of the Great Pyramid as he touches on this. Questioner, could I make the analogy of, in this apparent death, of losing the desires that are the illusory, common desires of third density and gaining desires of total service to others? 237. Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation. Ra, I am Ra. You are perceptive. This was the purpose and intent of this chamber, as well as forming a necessary portion of the King's Chamber positions if Fivenus. 14. Those of you who give a quick summation of lower and higher desires, whether a seeker decides to get this car or that computer or that large tent in a very important way makes almost no difference in the spiritual life of the seeker that makes these choices. But when you move into the area of desires for qualities, for truth, for higher spiritual capacity, then you are beginning to work with desires that are very helpful in terms of acceleration of your spiritual self. 15. This movement is what we hope for, and what we strive for as well. We encourage each to desire only the most high truth, to desire far beyond that which can be stated or imagined, for as you seek, as your thirst is expressed in the outstretched call of soul to all that resonates with it, so is a true ed to that entity ministers of light, shall we say, drawn to you justly and appropriately and in accordance with that which you have desired. Therefore, lift your desires ever higher. Seek to know that true and real identity which is your identity. He who can vibrate with this desire is moving as quickly as possible along the trail of the pilgrim. 16. Temper my spirit, O Lord, keep it long in the fire, make it one with the flame, let it share that upreaching desire, run the words to a favorite hymn of mine. In this sense, to desire is to fall in love. What is the process of desiring? 1. Perhaps, could describe desire as a falling in love with. Certainly, the desires of the heart are deeply felt and etched with the pen of love. The yearning for that centered, flowing, effortless living which each seeker has experienced at certain times is constant, and sometimes nearly overwhelming. How the seeker yearns to feel wholly co-ed with the wellsprings of life, light, love and truth. It is within each seeker's ability to so discipline the thoughts and the attitudes that, more and more, there is an increased potential for returning to a centered position of heart and mind within which a true simplification of the improving of the centered stance is achieved. 17. In pursuing the uplifting of desires, we need to be aware of the pitfall of the overuse of the will. 238. Chapter 8, the healing of the incarnation hidden from the first glance amongst rightful desires lies the exercise of what we have sometimes called the will. Each surely has experienced that energy of willing something to be so or not to be so. The personal will can take a part in desire which distorts desire from natural and even fun ioning into skewed values and incoher or incoherently perceived ways of thinking and processing information. Now, we say that we have called this faculty the will or the self-will. We might also call such distortion in natural desires the ion of prideful will or simply pride, for pride over and above the natural feelings coed with desire is as the cancer which takes over natural cells and begins multiplying them without stint. 18 We need to examine our desires for any hint of pride. Leave the good desires in place, but extirpate that pride. That was one of my challenges when I began this handbook, to realize that all within these pages is elsewhere known, and that although I am authentically doing this work as a service to others, I am also doing this for myself, to create a way to share what I have thought about and come to feel as useful to share through my years of working with wanderers, myself among others. This is an expression of myself, and were the handbook never to be published or read by many, it would still be a satisfying to me to have created this book. There is nothing for me to be proud of there, just a bit of ego-ion. Hopefully, it will be an ego-ion of mine that also helps other people. I can hope for that. I just can't legislate it, or take pride simply because I attempted to help. Pride is the most stubborn and wily of faults. So I encourage an exiling and unamused eye on the self and its motives until we begin to recognize that rascal, pride, and all its children, including justification, defense and judgment. Those of you who suggest two very useful techniques for working on knowing more about our desires, niggling them and polarizing them, there are two ways in which one may learn more about one's true desires. Firstly, one may refuse any thought concerning this choice for a limited period. This nail allows the deep, unconscious roots of mind to express deeper wisdom. The other technique is to choose on one diurnal period to spend every free second espousing a positive choice. In the next diurnal period, one must then take every free moment espousing the wisdom of a negative choice. This overstimulation of the mind's duality, yes, no, yes, no, achieves the same inner quiet within, and, again, a way is made for the wisdom deep within one to rise to the surface either through dreaming, a sudden feeling, or, as is more nearly the general case, a growing awareness, which soon amounts to certainty. 239, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation. That one particular choice is the appropriate one for the self at this crux. 19 Liara reports that journaling works best for her in looking at what she desires. If I am trying to reach clarity on an issue or question, I do not persist in my efforts when I am feeling such upheavals. Instead, I turn to writing, preferably with pen and paper, rather than a computer. That slows me down enough to begin dialoguing with my own wisdom. I begin by simply writing about what I am feeling, sometimes only a few sentences, sometimes whole pages. 20 Those of Hatton suggest a combination of working with and resting back from desires. Welcome to the ocean of incarnational experience. Your maps are faulty. You must steer by hunch and hope. You shall not avoid that destiny which lies before you. That destiny which was chosen by you as the focus of an incarnational time and space. We encourage each to attempt always to move towards those goals one instinctively desires. We encourage each to attempt to improve and to control the life experience for comfort and for joy, for rest and peace and love, yet also we encourage each to rest back in the virtue of that situation in which each finds himself. 21 I cannot leave this sub without some reference to the rather perverse nature of work with desires. When the spiritual realm is pushed for use and fun ion, paradoxes crop up immediately. Those of you who put this so well, each time you are able to get to the bottom of desire you will find that the base of that desire is the desire to cooperate faithfully and persistently with the destiny that has brought you all which you have so far enjoyed. At the back end of that great long train of desires you will find a little gay caboose that says, I surrender. not my will, but thine. 22 Will calls forth surrender, desire calls forth no desire, to the one who has no arising desire the universe is free. It is a gift. And every blade of grass, every ray of sunlight, every kind word, every gentle glance is a beauty and a truth. When you have no arising desires, you may feel the grass and the elements, the dance of the wind, the dance of fire, the dance of water and the dance of earth. And the universe lies before you infinitely complex, infinitely unified, at one with itself, at one with you, part of you, as you are a part of it. May we say that we do. 240, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation. Not XP. Many moving through third density to experience this state of no desire for longer than, say, a moment, an hour or an afternoon. Times of feeling this peace indeed are gifts that come now and again, and while you were experiencing this peace you wondered why you ever desired anything. 23 As long as we are content with experiencing this if for brief moments, we can recognize it and welcome it without puzzlement. These times are times of balance for us, little gaps wherein we can feel free of the weight of desire. Those seekers who find use in studying after the Taoist and Buddhist ways are great fans of this state of no desire. Again, I encourage each seeker not to try to destroy desire so that rest is achieved, but to allow desires without being attached to them. Let them come, and let them pass, watching the whole process with equanimity. Russell Lewis espouses this very well. It has been estimated that 99% of the average person's thoughts and irons are judgmental. It takes a strong individual to take her iron in spite of what their peers might say. The best method that I know of to avoid judgment is the Taoist's way of acceptance. For example, it is neither hot nor cold but simply 68 degrees. Consider the poor farmer whose wild horse got out of the corral and ran away. The neighbors said, "How unfortunate." But the farmer said, "Such is life." A week later the wild horse came back with three other stallions and a foal. The neighbors said, "How fortunate." But the farmer said, "Such is life." One day, as the sun was breaking in one of the new stallions, he fell off and broke his leg. The neighbors said, "How unfortunate." But the farmer said, "Such is life." The next day the army came through town looking for conscripts and didn't take the son because he had a broken leg. The neighbors said, "How fortunate." But the farmer said, "Such is life. If we just accept life as it unfolds without judging how good or bad it is, we would never be disappointed." 24 It's a wonderful attitude to adopt, and remembering this little story and such is life, can constitute a real asset when we feel overwhelmed in working with our desires. 241, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation, Balancing the Self Blur. A sensitive woman says, "I am self, and am trying to find, as it has seemed all my life, a balance between everything, the spiritual and material included. What I do have to say is this, I have been lucky enough that most of my guidance has come gradually, manifested both in others or in myself, and I have had the opportunity to witness the if of it in my life." 25 She pinpoints a major concern and a central way of doing indigo ray work upon the self on an ongoing basis. We are living this incarnation in order to further our evolution, and balancing the self helps to accelerate the pace of the rate of that evolution. Those of you who say, the balancing of energy within the mind and body and spirit of an entity is not the work of 1 week or 1 year or one lifetime, but is a process that is as natural a phenomenon as growing up physically, going through puberty, opening to the forces of insemination, pregnancy and birth, and being, in good time, shut down gradually from these energies as the spirit moves on through the incarnational process. The balancing of energies is, then, an ongoing concern, an ongoing process, one which we would not XP to end. Rather we would XP from our own experience that this process moves on infinitely until such time as the spirit chooses simply to release and relinquish these concerns. At that point the self is becoming the creator and moving back into that great, unknowing, unconscious well of infinite intelligence which is the infinite creator. 26 They suggest that this balancing is not for the comfort of the body or the life as much as for the alignment of the energies of the mind, body and spirit. Why would the creator allow, much less determine, that suffering on a continual basis be part of the excellent and beautiful plan for spiritual seeking?